Right now. Please. Please. Just say it. Cry out. Right now.
Now, I think we start. But keep working on that. I just want to double check all the slides here. So there's going to be a lot of this pauses when you guys are going to have to work together. And hopefully there's one more student, because you're supposed to pair off and have a debate against each other. And it could be, I think we just keep it as one team. I'm not sure it's going to be that beneficial to break it up. I mean, as I say, this... Can they see me, I guess? This is being recorded, so anything you say can. No, it won't. No, it's... As I say, we're going to be doing really strange things with words here. And it's stuff that is simple, but... you see. All right, you can do that exercise later. We'll talk about it during the presentation. The name of this course is What is IT Rhetorics for Security Managers and Risk Managers? Who wants to... I guess all of us hopefully will end up as a manager sometime. What do managers do? Good. And can you operationalize the term manage? No, this is, I mean, this is, you can, anybody operationalize the term manage? What does a security manager do? And on the screen, I have some information that gives you some types of indications. And you can be, and just go ahead, what, so, does he motivate people? Does he or she inform people? Does he or she command people? Does he or she entertain people? Right? Do you understand the diagram here? You see this quadrant here. This is quite interesting, important, and this slide. How much is this slide? If this was a quadrant system, how much is this slide informing you? How much is command? How much is the commandment in the slide? How much is their motivation in the slide? And how much is their entertainment in the slide? So everything, and the reason why I'm asking this is that you're going to have to be analyzing these things all the time. What is the difference between commanding someone and motivating them? Good. And informing and entertaining. It was interesting, we had a comment. Sorry, I always forget you. I always forget your name. Hello, why did I mean? Sorry, I mean this is. I keep. I mean, I don't be. You know, I really apologize for that. But how do you spell it? Halva made a comment just before this. He said, "Oh, this course is going to be the easiest one here because you're going to have fun." And what did you say, Halva? Halva, what did you say? Thank you. Now, you're going to get skills to inform people, persuade people, negotiate with people, control, entertain, and scare people using different and abstract information technologies. And I use this word here now, I'm talking about channels, medium, tools, etc. Right? Channels, medium, and tools. Is a model... A channel. Everybody understands the concept of channel. So in communication theory, of course, you have the manager and you have the people that have often more money than brains. You have people that have less money than brains. And then, so this is strategical, tactical, and operational, right? Often as a manager, you're at this level in the organization. And you have to talk up, and you have to talk down. Right? So you cannot command a CEO to take a risk. Right? Can you? Can you command? How much should you command and motivate people, in this case, in terms of the hierarchy? So here you have to command and motivate. Going up, you have to inform, entertain, and motivate. Right? I can't say too. Now, what the question I ask now is, what is an abstract channel? And actually, this in reality is an abstract channel. This picture, the way you frame communication, if you want, I am using this to communicate with you. What? Why did I use this abstract model to communicate with you? The answer is that I want to give you skills to inform, persuade, negotiate, control, up and down as a security manager. Okay? And you have to know when you do it and why you're doing it. This helps you also reason about security. So you see that rhetorics, from a theoretical perspective, also affects the way you and your enemy thinks. The four terms you're going to hear repeated over and over again is ethos, pathos, and logos, and crowd. These are just old Latin words that have been translated from Greek. Ethos stands for authority, pathos stands for feeling, and logos stands for logic. And what's happened today is that you're a manager, myself, I'm a teacher, in a sense, I'm a form of a manager, I'm trying to manage your knowledge. Okay? And I have old medium, paper and pen, I just gave you a piece of paper, you have the pen. I have new medias, I'm using this fancy overhead projector, etc. And then I have this really new medium. I do a lot of experimentation with how new different types of media affects communication. And who are you communicating with? It's the minds of your, in this case, students, employees, and your enemies. So security is about communicating with both your employees and your enemies. And which sort of technology is best? As I say, hopefully I will get the Islamic researcher, I talked to him last Friday to give a lecture on how IS is doing recruitment videos and analyze the rhetorics of terror. I have a master's thesis on this, if anybody would like to look at it and how this is being done. There are certain techniques that they are copying. We are analyzing how they are doing it. And we'll get bit into the analyze techniques, but we're more practical focus here in this course than theoretical focus. One of the research I'm doing there, I'm trying to, last night, and that's why I'm a bit distraught right now. I stayed up late to watch this. Also, I wrote a paper at the same time. That was the amazing part. I actually submitted a paper and watched Donald Trump at the same time. You have a copy of the paper. I had to translate a paper from Swedish into English and to submit it. It'll be interesting to see what the translations are like. We'll get into it. The reason I'm saying this is what's happening here when I talk about abstract models and exceptional models, and you people who have taken my courses know that this is a lot of what we call embedded knowledge in the slides. Can anybody identify the You've taken a course in social technical. Do you see this? The model that I tried to put in to this slide? All right, then they're going to put you on the spot now, so don't worry if you don't answer directly, but can you see the model? I know, that's fine. And this is very important, because I'm going to get into the next thing. We're going to have this competition, and I'm going to have this expert competition where you, as I say, you would compete against colonels from West Point, if you want. And it's amazing how I train the students, and then you get into the actual fight, whatever, and you can see how the... So you have to sort of learn to communicate even with that. But going back to this process, what I was talking about, this one here now. I said this comment here. And I do this a lot in you have to start looking at the symbols I use to communicate, and I do this for a reason. This is a symbol for what? A set. Understand that. So I'm going to be talking about different types of sets. So a lot of times I have the text, and then we call that the semantics, and then we're looking at a concept called semiotics. What symbols do we use to communicate and store knowledge? All right, semiotics. And the types of symbols. There are some symbols that are more efficient than others. Now, I said in this thing here that there are abstract mediums. And something called a mental model is an abstract medium. And we're giving some examples of mental models. And one of the mental models that the students were supposed to get from taking the social technical course, I asked them, say, what is the simple... Okay, you're going to get nervous. You're going to be in difficulty. You're going to have security situations. And what your mind's going to do, it's going to go down and use the simplest thing that you learned. You're going to see that complex system dynamics often don't work when you're in the middle of things. Just because of different ones. I said that the basic way you can describe any system is input, processing, output, right? So I'm trying to convey that model, right? Think about input, processing, output. And what is the input in this course? Class, and I use an abbreviation, which is pedagogical trick again. It stands for teaching, learning activities. That's where you guys are going to have to do things. We have a book that's free. It's old, and it's good enough. It's called A Rule Book for Argumentation. Let's start getting into this, how you should read this. I have some other books too that are free. We have slides. I have some reports. We'll put things out there all the time, and then we can talk later how useful this is for you. So it's a lot of pull from your part. Like, I don't know if you can see this. This report is nothing to do with security. It's called The Rhetorics of Dread, Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt in Information Technology Marketing. I've made a lot of money out of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. IBM has made a lot of money out of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Donald Trump might become president under fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Okay? It's a technique we all use. We use it in marketing. We use it in everything. So I put these things out there. One of the things you're going to see a lot of is YouTube clips. I will give you references you can look at home in your at your own pace and old time. There's so much out there that is so much better than me. Okay? There's people that do rhetorics for a living, right? And they explain things. What you're going to be getting from me, I'm going to be trying to put in those small things that are related to security. There's very few that actually talk about the rhetorics of security. You would find this all in the resource page, but you can send it around. So you can give some idea and keep yourself entertained, because I'm supposed to entertain you, right? Remember, I'm supposed to, you know, command, motivate. So what you're supposed to do here now, if you want, you could have done this. Imagine if we had a real-time computer system monitoring me and measuring me, right? So when I'm talking, how much, this is was 1, 2, right? 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, this is 0. What you usually get, you get some sort of format. So in this case, this is a diagram. This will be changing all the time. So this is fluctuating all the time when I'm talking. I'm informing you. At the same time, I'm trying to entertain you by having what? Fluctuations in my voice, using different annotations. I'm trying to command you, saying that we're going to have the exam. Here, take this paper, look at this. And I'm trying to motivate you. So you're doing all this at the same time. So imagine this diagram. This is the mental model of what you have. When you're communicating with someone, this is moving around all the time. And this is what you have to optimize. What's important is questions. Simon and Morris and I, we developed an app that we're going to want you to use for formulating and voting on questions. Your comments. And then last, I have this one that says, what's the difference between a comment and a comment with an argument? Now, I'm trying to, we're talking English now. And I know, does anybody want to jump in? What's a, you have opinions and you have arguments, right? A lot of time people, comments are basically opinions, they're not arguments. And you have to be able, and we're going to give you techniques to analyze this. Unfortunately, we only have 4 lectures on this. I go to the next page. But going back to the output. So that's the input. We have the courses. I get another slide for the process. The output is we're going to have a debate. Back and forth how the debate should be. And we will discuss this as a group, and we see how many people online. My idea is actually to do the whole thing via Skype. So the exam will be over Skype. All right? Will this be recorded too? I've done this before. I had 2 students that were, one was in Tromsø, I think, and the other was in Canary Islands. And they had to debate. And we talk what we, if that's appropriate, if you want to face to face. The trouble is some people can't make it on the 1st and the 2nd of December, and I appear to be one of them. I don't know yet. I don't know where I'm going to be on the 1st and the 2nd of December as it is now. I have to pick a date, but that's the one. And there will be a written one. Now, the idea with this is that you can have an oral debate online or in person. We discuss these possibilities. The written, you are going to have to be able to argue against yourself. So we're going to test you on your ability to be schizophrenic. So in the first debate, you're arguing for something. And in your written comments, you're arguing against yourself. Right? So that's the thing. Now, in terms of the lecture plan and what we're doing, today, go through the material in the course. We're going to talk about 6 honest serving men. I'm going to start working on chapter 1 in the book, the 12 chapters, and I'll describe this book a bit later on. Next weekend, you have a bit of homework. I want you to do experiment with fear, uncertainty, and doubt in information security. So you're going to have to formulate a ghost story that you know about. If anyone wants to borrow, I have some ghost stories from Manitoba. This is the part of Canada I come from. And then we have the security knock. Sorry, it's null. I spelled it wrong there. How many people can go to it? 1. You know it's on the 28th in the morning. We're bringing all these big Oberstleutnant. Didn't you know that? Okay, I'll show you. So we're bringing people from the military college here and people from the cyber defense from NATO here. On the morning of Friday, you have to sign up for it. I'll show you how to sign up for later. It's Friday morning. And then there's free lunch, so we're coming for free lunch, motivation. On the next meeting is on the 3rd, same time. I go through a book called The Role of Rhetoric Theory in Military Intelligence Analysis. It's a very good book put out by the Air Force Academy. It's interesting because it uses a Foucauldian perspective to analyze intelligence. Now, I'm using a fancy word, Foucault. Now, Foucault was a discipline of Marx, in a sense. He's a Marxist sociologist. So I thought it was quite interesting to see the Americans using a Marxist sociologist to analyze intelligence. So it's a very well, it's an interesting book in terms of intelligence. And then hopefully I'll have a guest lecture about how he's analyzing. And it's actually an interesting research project we're trying to develop in terms of fact-checking Islamic State rhetoric. One of the problems, we see what happens here. And then on the 10th, we're going to talk about finding fallacies. We're going to have an exercise that I call, it's a good exercise, I did it before, it's called PowerPoint Karaoke. You will get a slide package that you have to present that you've never seen before. And this is, you can Google it, Google PowerPoint Karaoke, the Germans are very good at this. You just stand up in front, and this is very important because as security consultant and manager, many times I was stood there with PowerPoint packages that I've never seen before and have to present. Sharpen your skills. And then we plan how we're going to do this oral exam if you want to do it online, face-to-face, etc., etc. Because the problem here is we're going to have to match up people. I think since you're getting doctoral credit for this, you should go twice. I mean. And then what I would do, I think I will do this after November 10th. People have this. I usually book time for Skype sessions. Like I know... since you're going to be probably doing an exam on Skype, we're going to have a Skype session. You're going to have to argue via Skype with me. Right? It's actually easier, you see. I did some arguing yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, yesterday I was doing some arguing via Skype, and I actually won. I was quite amazed, too, because I can see how the individuals on the other side weren't used to this. And I get into the actual technique when you're doing that. So there's only 8 hours of seminars. So a lot of the time for this course, you're going to have to sit down and reflect by yourself. Speaking of how I want you to reflect by yourself, the fact is that you can study rhetoric everywhere, like anything else. You can study security anywhere. You can study anything anywhere. So especially nowadays with the American campaign going on. Now, this is an exercise, and it's set up in a certain way for a reason. So now I'm just going to start this. It's worked before. I want you to just watch this. Reflect on it while you're watching.
The Almighty says this must be a fashionable fight. It's drawn the finest people. Where is thy salute?
For presenting yourselves on this battlefield. I give you thanks.
This is our army. To join it, you give homage.
I give homage to Scotland. And if this is your army, why does it go?
We didn't come here to fight for them.
Oh, the English are too many.
Sons of Scotland. I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. He kills men by the hundred. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arse. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
Fight against that?
No!
We will run.
And we will live.
Aye. Fight and you may die. Run, and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Okay, so what was the, what can you just think? What were some of the arguments that you saw there? Mm-hmm. Do you see any arguments? I know, and it's difficult because an argument for, right? So what we would do now, right, is that when you're doing things, we would write this down. And I'm going to show you now someone who's already done this for us. The answer is lying on Google, everybody, right? It's not as good as I can bring up other things. And that's the next link, right? So here. The quality is not as good, but the information is.
Where is thy salute?
For presenting yourselves on this battlefield. I give you thanks.
This is our army. To join it, you give homage.
I give homage.
So there's two things. One, he informed them. And he commanded him, right? Right? There's an information followed by a command. Is that an argument? No. So that's the thing, where the argument?
And if this is your army, why does it go?
That's the question, right? And then this is turning into an argument between two people, right? What does he say?
We didn't come here to fight for them!
Premise?
Oh! The English are too many!
Another argument.
Scotland.
Right. So here, it's been annotated. Yes. Or fact. That's the answer, right? Right. So here, what we have now, what you're going to see, going back to original, when you're looking at speech and you're trying to persuade somebody through an argument, there are three channels. You use the ethos channel, the logos channel, and the pathos channel. Now, someone here who's a lecturer in rhetorics, which I'm not, but someone else has done this, I would disagree with some of the things, saying that this is ethos now. Says, Sons of Scotland, I am William Wallace. Since the credibility of William Wallace is already established, Mel Gibson just needs to identify himself. That's an ethos argument. So you can see how the word's getting on into what. First, we define an argument as a proposition or a series of supporting statements. Next one. So keep going.
I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. Kills men by the hundred. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arse.
In a sense, that was a counter argument. But still what we would call ethos. Or going back to this to understand it. Imagine this diagram now, right? So this is, he's doing what now? He's trying to entertain. So this is ethos. Right? So this is an example of the diagram. This is the dynamic thing going on. This is your shield. You're fighting somebody, you're arguing with somebody, and you have a shield. And we get into, I'm going to jump back to this. If you remember the four things I put on the board, do you remember those now? I said ethos, pathos, logos, crowd. Okay? Ethos, pathos, logos, and crowd. These are the four things you're going to always have to think about.
I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
We will live.
So this is the counter-arguments, right?
Die. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live.
That appears to be like a logical argument. Okay. According to statistics, William Wallace says that if you run, you will live. So the argument is logical, but what I'm doing now is turned it into an ethos argument because, say, William Wallace said that. So you're seeing that this concept of what is ethos, pathos, and logos is very fluid. So there's no real strict rule. Pathos. As I say, entertaining, informing, commanding, and motivating. He's moving around this ring constantly.
At least a while.
And dying in your beds many years from now, would you
help
be
that
willing
music in the background
to train all the days from this day to that?
A minor tone is always
one
great.
Chance, just one chance to come
it
back.
It helps with the power.
Here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives.
Now, what you will see in the course, I'll give you a bunch of these links. We don't have to give them all of them here. But this was interesting now, I think, in the context of what was talked about last night.
Do you love humanity enough to save it?
Or has someone created a plague?
Okay. So now we're analyzing the other powers that be. So this is when they killed Bin Laden, right? So
good evening. Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands.
Looking at tone, etc., which we won't get so much into this now in the course. But you can see how he's making these comments, right?
...of innocent men, women, and children. It was nearly 10 years ago that a bright September day was darkened by the worst attack on the American people in our history. The images of 9/11 are...
This, you see later, I'm going to give an example about this, a bright September day. He's framing it, right?
...are seared into our national memory. Hijacked planes cutting through a cloudless September sky.
And don't forget, he's reading this. He's doing speech karaoke. He's doing political karaoke. Right? It's not him that's written about a third of that. He's just selected it, right? And what you're going to have to do as security managers, you're going to have to write PowerPoints and speeches for the CEOs.
The Twin Towers collapsing to the ground.
Hey.
Black smoke billowing up from the
so
Pentagon.
So you can watch it offline. I don't want to get into
Flight 93 in Shanksville.
Now, it's interesting what he does in order to keep authority. He keeps saying numbers. Flight 93. September 11th. because he's trying to make sure, if I sit around and entertain you, I'm going to have a hard time either commanding and motivating you. So there's all, when you're giving these type of things, you have to jump between this and that to make it a balanced speech. Why does Donald Trump fall flat with most of you? Because he's not getting the information. Right? I mean, you would train that away from him. Right? But why is it working? The four principles: ethos, pathos, logos, and crowd. Hillary Clinton standing here giving him far too much information. So here's Hillary Clinton, right? And here's Donald Trump. Right? There's nothing right or wrong here, right? It all depends on and what you have to figure out if you're going into an argument, if your enemy's doing this, what's the best way to counter that? Should I do the same thing or should I be the opposite? And we get into that later in terms of doing. What's most important now is you have to analyze your own arguments and then learn how to analyze the enemy's arguments. As I say, there's tons of material how to do this. This was an interesting one too.
So give you some. So this one actually takes the same speech and analyzes in chunks.
If we fail to act, the Assad regime will see no reason to stop using chemical weapons.
So this is this little, anybody seen a great movie, it's called The Thin Red Line. This is sort of like the broad red line that Obama drew through Syria. If you step over this line, well, they're on the line. They haven't really stepped over yet because it's not a thin red line that we drew in the sand. So that's the logic he used, right? Now, why couldn't Obama use that?
No reason to stop using chemical weapons.
Why couldn't Obama use that now? It's an interesting reflection. No, not really. It has to do with the medium. The debating format is such you can't have PowerPoints. I can't go during a thing and draw a red line. I can only use verbal communication. When have you seen a politician go up and use PowerPoints? Right? They're not using the right... That medium has certain restrictions. And the argumentation would be totally different if people were allowed to go and draw diagrams, etc., etc. But somehow, our society doesn't demand it. But we demand it of you when you're doing your thesis. It's really weird. I mean, but in business, often the arguments are supported by PowerPoint, so that's why we're using that medium, training in that. But and he's not using PowerPoint here either, right? Then I think he has a. I don't know this one. I think he has another. So he ends off, I think, with ethos. He says. So he's trying to suggest that in the speech. Now you're seeing, the reason I'm showing this now is that you can see how everybody's sort of loosely categorizing these things.
That's my judgment as Commander-in-Chief. But I'm also the president of the world's oldest constitutional democracy.
Now what was interesting about that statement in terms of the diagram here, it was the way he described a democracy. What were the two words that he used to describe? What were the two adjectives? Old. So we have to look at those out. Should he use both? Could he said the world's best country? Or what would Trump use? You've seen enough of it on TV, so I don't have to say. What word would he use instead of oldest? Yeah. Right. So these are little tricks of the trade that you have to be able to analyze. Not because you're interested in American politics, we should be. It's just that you should figure out if you want to use that tool. Do you want to say to your employees that we have the greatest security policy around? Well, who is this guy? You might have to, depending on the crowd. Or you might, you know, if it's an American company, we're the biggest telecom equipment supplier in the world. That's you have to and you have to select those words carefully. So that was that link. No, there's different things for this. I might hop to. I will jump to something now. A good video clip. It's only a minute, and I was thinking of when I was going to introduce the concept of equivalence. This is a very good movie too if you want to learn about how to do these things. So this is good here because it's actually showing you identifying. So right now I've used the videos to identify what? Ethos, pathos, and logos. I'm not really showing you, in a sense, these are categories of of arguments. Now these are the techniques. This is called equivocation argument.
So, what happens when you're wrong?
Oh, Joey, I'm never wrong.
But you can't always be right.
Well, if it's your job to be right, then you're never wrong.
But what if you are wrong?
Okay, let's say that you're defending chocolate, and I'm defending vanilla. Now, if I were to say to you, vanilla is the best flavor ice cream, you'd say...
No, chocolate is.
Exactly. But you can't win that argument. So, I'll ask you. So you think chocolate is the end-all and be-all of ice cream, do you?
It's the best ice cream. I wouldn't order any of it.
Oh, so it's all chocolate for you, is it?
Yes, chocolate is all I need.
Well, I need more than chocolate. And for that matter, I need more than vanilla. I believe that we need freedom and choice when it comes to our ice cream. And that, Joy Naylor, that is the definition of liberty.
But that's not what we're talking about.
Ah, but that's what I'm talking about.
But you didn't prove that vanilla is the best.
I didn't have to. I proved that you're wrong. And if you're wrong, I'm right.
But you still didn't convince me.
It's that I'm not after you. I'm after them.
Okay, so the question was, does it make a difference? Depends who you're after. Right? Now, this was taken out of context just because it was a learning moment. You asked a good question. I wanted to jump to that. And this is what is called equivocation. You saw how the guy basically was doing... and you it's on page 8 of the rule book, though. And I show later how it's done. And we will work in the class with one example of equivocation. You have to work together on an argument that I put out about females and information security. But I got ahead of myself just a bit. All right, so far... And here are a bunch of links you can watch at home. All right, I put out the PowerPoints both, and you just watch them at home because we don't have to wait. Any questions so far? No? I'm going to maybe take a 5-minute break, but I think I go through this next section. So I'm giving you some information and tease of what the course is about. So what tools do we use to model and communicate security? So I'm considering a word a tool. Pictures and mathematics. Or we can mix it up. Do we use pictures, words, and mathematics? Do we use mathematics, words, and pictures? What order should we use them? So often, I remember I had a presentation there, and I said, okay, security. IT security equals what's that for? A set. Right? Now, you just took your exam in risk management. IT security is a set of no, but it equals. IT security is a set of risk mitigation measures. RM1, RM2, RM3. Right? I'm using a form of mathematics, set theory, to describe risk. Now, this is right because you're a bunch of academics. She gave the right answer if you were talking to a controller, right? IT security is about protecting your assets, right? So you would say, how would you continue on in that? So I said, well, I don't understand set theory. Well, what you see now, it's a bunch of risk mitigation to protect, and here you're sort of jumping and trying to get this controller to be a bit more scientific, protect an ordered set of assets. You see, understand the term mathematically? An ordered set. This is not an ordered set. This is just a set. When you're doing risk management, basically what you're doing is trying to have an ordered set of assets. This is asset with the lowest value, or say the highest value, and this is the asset with the lowest value. And what are you doing mathematically when you do a risk assessment? We go over to logic now. You're taking all the assets, and then you're putting in a diagram here, which is a diagram of all the risk mitigations, and they're supposed to be protecting those assets that are this way, right? But are you protecting all the assets? So this would be RM1, RM2, RM3, and they're protecting the assets, in this case, the overlying assets, A1 to A4. I'm trying to communicate the security model. And I can do it to you guys, because you guys have taken set theory and seen a bunch of strange paragraphs, et cetera, right? So I'm basically, and to understand it, that mathematics is basically a language. So actually, words and mathematics are the same thing. And that's what you have to understand when you're arguing this, right? That you're going to see the same thing here. I mean, I can say I'm using mathematics and pictures if you want that, but in reality, it's sort of a thing that keeps on growing, etc. Now, what we often talk about is, you see here, you could have security, and everybody talks about it, you could have security by culture, security by compliance, security by risk assessment, security by policy. And I've seen these things over 30 years. I've seen all these buzzwords come up all the time. Well, that's fine. It's because we use different words and pictures and mathematics depending on who is paying the bill. If it's a controller, I want to use these terms. If it's Stephen, I have to use mathematics. Otherwise, it's not. Otherwise, you won't get your doctoral degree. All right? But, and then, you know, everybody thinks that I just work with policy. It's just me. Okay. All right, next slide. So, this, to give you some concrete information now, This is the format of the final exam. Okay, so the first paragraph, you can read it. Okay. So, you're supposed to argue for or against an artifact. In this case, the artifact is an artificial intelligence access control system. All right. Now, what happens, you are a security manager, or you are the security lawyer hired by the union to argue against the security manager. The fact is, you don't know which side you're on. As I say, the union is against the introduction of CyberEye as an access control system. The way it works often in large companies, people often talk about privacy and all these issues. It's changed a bit in Europe today with the new agreements. But what we do in Ericsson, we would talk to the union and say, all right, let's agree on arbitrage. Because, I mean, our employees work all over Europe. How can we say the laws in Norway? In many cases, in the contractual situation, unions and companies will agree on that. You go to arbitrage. That's why the Swiss are so rich. So what you do is you said, okay, all the contracts that we have between our employment contracts go on the laws of Geneva. Or in this case, if you want, or in Switzerland. And then we have an arbitrator deciding. Who's going to decide on the strike with the train? Everybody believes it's going to go to arbitrage in the end, I guess. We don't know. So everybody understand what an arbitrage is, right? It's when two parties have an agreement. You decide before you have a disagreement who's going to be the judge. So you guys are going to be sitting here in Norway having to present your case to an arbitrator in Geneva over Skype. So I've given you a handout. It's called Saint versus Satan. In the, I'll get into this now. So this is a bit of a screen dump when I get back to this. It's called Saint versus Satan. This is the article. It's an article I wrote in 1994. I've been doing this exam for about 23, 24 years. So, right? Right, so that's, you can read that. And that's one of the problems you will see that the article was written for a publication at Telia. I was in charge of future business in security for Netcom, or in this case, Telia. And my idea there at the time was try to convince Telia to get into the artificial intelligence intrusion detection business. Because they could have positioned themselves instead of, buying Kapinski firewalls, etc. We're trying to convince them because they actually are in a better position to do this than anybody else. Okay, so the way the format of it is quite... is a bit different. This is called a cross-examined debate. It's not a format that's used that often. We flip a coin. We decide which side you're going to get. So before you come to the exam, you don't know if you're the union or the management. The one who's for has 3 minutes to present a case, an argument. So you have a three-minute argument using any IT mechanisms you want. You can use videos, you could use PowerPoint, you can use voice, you can use whatever. You're just arguing to someone over the internet. Don't forget, in Skype you have share screen. And then the against have 3 minutes to present. And then the fours, you get to ask two questions of your opponent. So this is like a cross-examination. So they have presented the arguments, and you get to ask two questions. And the against get to ask two questions, then they get 1 minute for summary, and then they get 1 minute back. And then the arbitrator says, okay, this one made the best argument. We're going for Sabrak. Or this one made the best argument. We're going against Sabrak. And you're not, your grade has nothing to do whether you win or lose. It's how you use your arguments. Okay? And all the rules of argumentation you read in this 88-page report. You can commit as many fallacies as you want. You just why? It's not. I'm not trying to prove you wrong. You're trying to convince. No. Now, what I have, and I will bring it later, is I have recorded all the past arguments from the students. So I will give you an example in the next lecture of actual exams. All right? So you can see how other students have done this. And that we can record this, and when you leave, you can actually... It's funny, most people don't want to see it again. I don't know why. It's good. But it's... No, but this is very important. This I think I can do it. I can go the whole 2 hours if you want. Or do you want to take a 3-minute break or something? Anybody? Break? Yeah, I think you want to take a break then.
All right, there's an this is an advertisement.
We started the Cyber 912 Student Challenge 3 years ago to try and bridge the gap between the really technical part of cyber and combine it in with national security, international relations, security studies thinking. What might be true at the technical level doesn't have to be true at the national security level, and vice versa. We need both of these to come together if we're going to solve the problems that are facing the United States and the world over the next 5, 10, 20 years.
This competition is for students to basically focus on some of the most important cybersecurity policy topics on an international level.
And we spend a lot of our time talking about technology. It really is a people issue. I was on the phone this morning with the CEO of a very large global company, and he's having trouble understanding it. So the fact that you all can get out there in the form of this competition and articulate these issues in a meaningful way makes me feel confident that the future is very bright.
It's been a
all right, so go back to the slide. As I say, last year I took a Swedish team to compete, and this year I've been told by the powers that be that I have money to take a Norwegian team to Geneva to compete in this competition. And the course, and this will be an activity outside of regular teaching activity. So this is not a course in itself, but this course will help you prepare for that. And that's why these are some of the resources. What I will do is that I will put in this folder now, I put all the material I got from the competition. You will see the different phases, and what they do is they give you different incidents happening, and you're supposed to make policy statements, and you have 20 minutes to explain to a panel of judges, which is supposed to represent the politicians, what they should do or not do. And I've recorded it, and you can see different ones and how they did that and how you make an argument. And what's interesting, too, all the arguments have to be made verbally. There's no PowerPoint or things like that. You have to stand in front with your... sorry about this. You have to stand in front of this panel and make arguments for them. This, in the resource thing, you have past debates. So this is the past debate that I did in Stockholm. And there was a team exercise. So we had teams doing this. So you can see that if you go into the frontal room, under, in this case, it says past debates. You will see that. Can you check that if you? It's going to work? Also here you have the different resources. You have the Saint versus Satan here, and that's this article here. So this next week I will give you more examples of the exam. This is a team debate where they're arguing the same issue, and this is the material that explains the debate. Not very well, I might add. So you have a lot of leeway to play around what exactly artificial intelligence is doing, so you can be creative. And that's the other material. This is the Mills article. It doesn't actually appear now. It's beforehand. It talks about rhetoric. So here are more web pages of interest that you can discuss later on. You can look at later on. You can work between each other. As you can see, this is a list of all the different fallacies. These are different rhetorical ones. And I give another list later on of interesting web pages. To kick off now, I want you to write down three reasons why you're here and three reasons why you shouldn't be here. You got a minute. All right. You don't. If they're not written down, it's fine. So
I want you, your name again, so we're bad at names, Henrik, to convince your name, Tonya, not to be here. Yeah. He's supposed to convince you not to be here now. You have 10, 20 seconds. Kills too. Can you argue back why you should be here? Why you should be here? What's important, I said three arguments. So what, to answer that, you say first, second, and third. Right? So use those terms to structure it. It helps it. I want you to convince Halva to be here, and to not be here. I just said something you didn't copy, so I'm going to be a bit... what did I just say about numbers? Firstly...
Okay, sorry.
No, the point is I did say that. Before, when you were saying this, when I answered him, I said, very good. A good idea is to number these things. So we have to develop our listening skills when it comes to... Because it's very difficult. The thing is, very difficult to think and talk at the same time. And that's the toughest thing with arguing, because you have to think and talk at the same time. Right. So, and what I wanted to do, the reason I did this, I don't want to put you on the spot. How many of the arguments that she's saying now match your argument, Helen, on your paper? No, but you're supposed to write down three things why you're here and why you're not here. Do any of her arguments match your arguments? No, you haven't written them down, right? What was the one you shouldn't be here for, then? So what was the first one? Why you shouldn't be here. Yeah, fine. And that's the interesting thing, too. So when you're thinking about something, you're going to have to be schizophrenic all the time. I want you. Because you are schizophrenic? Or what? But I'm trying to give you skills and techniques. The idea is you write these things down. Because in the debate, you won't have time to do things, and it's actually your notes that you're going to remember. You see what I'm saying? And that's what helps with the 1, 2, and 3. Now, what can happen when you're doing this in a real debate is you're going to write down things, and then the 1, 2, and 3, you need it quickly to rank them. Because in many cases, you might not come up with the best idea first or whatever. So writing things down, and then put the 1, 2, and 3 afterwards. Because it might turn out that you don't have time to say more than one argument in the debate or whatever. So these are little skill things I'm giving you when you're doing that. That's why you have to write things down. And it's really strange nowadays, too, with the computer, because you're typing and you don't know what to do about that. And
what will happen in the future. You're not even allowed to write things down. So you're going to have to, what I do is I use my fingers. 1, 2, 3. And what happens when I'm doing this in practice, I had this happen to me on Monday, right? I was debating with people on very big issues. And I didn't have pen and paper. So I kept this up, 1, 2, and 3. And never get over 3 because you're not going to manage it. But if you can, if you're good, you can get up to 5. That's the whole 3. And then what you would have to do is a stack. So if you write down something more and you had a list of 1, 2, 3, and say, oh, I have a fourth one, you have to cross out one because there's a good chance you're not going to remember all 4. But just realize that. You can get yourself up in skills to do that, to, you know, talk and think at the same time. Yes? So, okay, that was an exercise in the bit to get you to reflect while you're here, etc. And it's a double exercise. I want you to keep on reflecting while you're here all the time to help motivate you. And then also I'd like to know, in a sense, if I had the time, but this course is sort of like... We should actually discuss this and say, okay, so if this is your goal here, then you should look at this material and this material. Do you understand? That would help me to do that in the future. But so there was 3 levels in this exercise, right? One is the personal level. One is the skill level. So just the skill of how you argue and practice. And the allocation level, because using 1, 2, and 3. Okay. What I would have done, too, sometimes... In the future, I would, and say we were training for the exercise, you would have to come up the front to do this. Now, what's important when you're doing this would have been interesting is to see how well you matched each other. So if you sat down and started comparing the reasons you're here. Because in many cases, the enemy is not 100% this way or that way. So if you can sort of get them on their own arguments, it really bothers them. Right? And there was an interesting trick that went on in this video about equivocation. So where did the kid make the mistake? We get into this now. He made one verbal mistake that gave his father the ability to attack him in the debate. What is the equivocation? Yes. Yes, he did. Right here. The sentence is right here. Ice cream, vanilla's the best. I wouldn't want anything else. And that's where he limited himself. And then his father, taking that and equivocated not wanting something else with not wanting something else for you. He turned around the argument, right? He didn't say, I don't want anything else for you. But he was able to turn that around. So that statement, when he, as a kid, he doesn't know how to debate with his father, and his father could turn that around when he said, using the superlative. Do you remember that now, or is that too, you were laughing too much in the, I bring it up again so you can see it. I know it's, it's called equivocation. He's using the counter argument of equivocation. And okay, I'm jumping here, but I think we're all adults and we can deal with this. We have enough time. I just go through this. It's only 1 minute, the whole video, so I can.
So. What happens when you're wrong? But you didn't prove that vanilla is the best.
Joy Naylor, that is the definition of liberty. Well, I need more than chocolate.
So here.
I wouldn't order any of it.
Oh, so there. It's all chocolate.
Best ice cream? I wouldn't order any of it.
Oh, so it's all chocolate.
Do you?
It's the best ice cream? I wouldn't order any of it.
It's the best ice cream? I wouldn't order any other. And that's when he pounces.
Oh, so it's all chocolate for you, is it?
Yes, chocolate is all I need.
Well, I need...
You see how he's setting off for the baiting him?
I need more than chocolate. And for that matter, I need more than vanilla. I believe that we need freedom. And
Trump does this all the time. And it's so bad that people don't pick up on it. I mean, this is a classic trick or whatever. I mean, but it's like, this is 101 argumentation. One is arguing to Logos, and the other is arguing to Ethos, or Pathos, right? So he's not... So this is actually, coming back from the... we get into that soon. So I just wanted to jump on that now because it was there now. I just quickly go through this. Okay, so the next exercise... To understand why we're doing this... another exercise. Think about this. These are two posters trying to recruit you guys. One from a small college in southern Stockholm, with having this female standing going, "Well, hast I kunskap?" And the other one from Stockholm University. We have to recruit people to this new program. Which one should the new NIST lab use, A or B, and why? Reflect. And just write down a letter A or B, and one reason why, for, and one reason against. So, which one did you pick? Sorry, I didn't get your name? Jonathan. Which one did you pick, A or B? Why? But saying we're trying to recruit people. What's the goal? Is that the type of, which type of students do we want? Can anybody argue against that? Now, what's interesting, I can argue against this now. This is basically what's going on in Norway now. This whole business about Torbjørn and the Kunnskapsminister and all this, right? So basically the structure you had in Norway was that the small universities were attracting these people. And the big brand name universities were attracting these people. And what you get in Norway is a bimodal curve. So the students getting into here, they have what, 20, 30 to get in? Then they have 50, maybe 60. And these ones have whatever. So if we look at the quantity of people coming into the colleges, we have this two different groups. And what's interesting, as a teacher, basically, these people teach themselves. These are the, and the real thing that what Norway needs is to have this curve like this, right? These curves aren't very good for anybody, and that's what's been going on now. So everybody, this is the BI people, you know, the people that do this ones. And what you get in Norway is, you know, these are the ones taking over and running the companies and making decisions and losing our pension fund. A very fast rate too. So the problem is, often, and this has to do with two factors: motivation, skills, knowledge. So we want to recruit these people. How did we get these people now? Now we just have the name, NTNU. Beforehand, we had to recruit these people to build up the thing. So going back to your answer, yeah, it's fine. It's a good argument.
But I'm using a visual argument to explain why I would choose A or B. That's all. So that's an example of using a visual argument. Now, can we question this? I guess we can, whatever. I can give you statistics that support this. And who is Trump selling to? The Americans? Or the intellectual Americans in New York? This is what happened in the United States. They created this gap. You have your trailer park people. You're not for us. If you're not for us, you're against us. And everybody says, why is he succeeding? Because they have this binomial market in the politics of the United States. Now, going back to other issues, we talk about this in terms of teaching. But I don't think we have to bring it up now, because what you see is that different types of groups have different types of teaching activities. So, for example, I mean, I could sit here and give you PowerPoints and whatever, but I have to go through this thing. You can see here that about a third of my lecture would have to be entertaining the students here rather than informing them. And also, you can't really command. You have to whatever. What often happens with these students, you have to actually motivate them to do something that's not a C, because they can do an A, but they won't. So Thursday night, I mean, it's Thursday, they're not going to come in on Friday. I know it's interesting. I know some students that live in it, and basically, you know, they taking their course here, and they have a full-time job in UV. Rather than having them working harder and getting A's and all this. No, I get a C and I make my money. Now, this is an example of crowd. I'm just trying to show you. So you have to understand your market that you're talking to. So, example here. So, as I say, what are the reasons why this person would be here? What are the reasons why this person would not be here? You see, that's the same sort of logic here, right? You would have to figure out three reasons to market to this person and three reasons to market to that person. That's it. Oh. Yes. Okay. So, I mean, the fact that the people couldn't identify that he was talking about liberty, if they had a basic course in rhetorics, they could have seen it with equivocation and the argument was false. The fact is that the large portion of the population, yeah, liberty, freedom and justice for all, man. Right? And they have to figure this out ahead of time. But okay, so just a quick one here. You all know about this. This is the session on the 16th, 28th in the morning. You have to sign up for it, so go on the web and sign up. I can send the link so you can sign up, or does everybody know about this? Do you know any of these guys? Erbestand, Brian, Erblist. Right? And then what I want to talk about here now is this pizza and panic thing that I'm trying to run. So you guys are going to have to, for the next lecture, do the presentation for that. Whether you're in the competition or not, I won't force you. I'd love you to do it. I'd like to motivate you, but I can't command you to do it. All right? And what is the ghost story? Okay, what is the challenge? Your task, and this is homework now, right? So you have this and you have to present it in the next lecture, seminar. Your task is to tell your fellow cyber citizens, this class, a story about an information or cybersecurity incident that will get them to stop, be scared, think social technical security and insecurity, and change your fellow cyber citizens to act, feel, and know how to be good citizens in cyberspace. So you're trying to change somebody's behavior. Passwords, backup, not clicking on unknown links. Figure out what behavior you want to change and then design a story that would get them to change their behavior. To
You're going to have to inform them, motivate them, command them, and entertain them. The telling of the story should be between 1 and 5 minutes, and it can be an oral narrative, or you can use visual aids like PowerPoint or YouTube videos. And so for next class, I want you to do that. So everybody's going to have a presentation. We're 6 in the class, so 5 in the class. Yes. Same time. Nope. It's on Thursday. Our class is on Thursday, the exercise on Friday. Do you have to do it? So you have it there, so you might as well join in the competition and get free pizza. You can see I'm sort of cross-selling here. I can't command you to do it in the thing, but you're getting free pizza. I'm trying to motivate you. Yes, you can. You can steal it from me. It will not in any way affect the way I judge your grade. Yes, it is. But I'm saying, I need people to participate, and I would appreciate it. What I'm using here now is guilt. Pathos. It doesn't seem so, though. And it's interesting, too, but when you point it out, of course, it loses its power. Yes. But still, you still have to, then you do the next class. Good, that's a good argument. Is it? Shit. Is anybody okay to, I can postpone the lecture. You have to go home? That's fine. So okay, yeah, I understand. You can see. You gonna be here? You gonna be here? You got. You gonna be here? We postpone it by 45 minutes. You've never met Roger, have you? Don't worry about it. I could. I can go after if you don't mind. I mean, I'm not going to ask Roger to cut anything down. We see what happens, but I've seen him go on that long. Good, thanks for the information. All right, if you're not here for that, you have to present anyways the next day just to give you practice. Yeah, they're going to have a conference down there. You can look at you. Yeah, they're going to stand in front. You can look at it later when you're presenting this. Right? You don't have to, of course, if you don't want to present in front of the camera. Oh. So this is an example. I just set out a goal story here. I go quickly. I think I did. This is an example of a goal story that is, I'm trying to motivate the students to prepare. Right, so that's the goal of the thing. That's the first thing after December. It's the one. Right? It's the year of our Lord, 2014. It's a sunny day in Jurvik. Stealing from the master, that's what Obama says. I should have said a bright sunny day. You're sitting in this room. It's a bright sunny day. I know. I saw it in real time. I was in Ericsson. You are sitting in this room, right? Waiting to start your exam for the course IMT 4152, Social Technical Security Modeling Analysis 1. You have been assigned seat number 13. You open your exam booklet. and begin to read the two pages of the exam question before you start writing. Question one, easy. Question two, no problem. Question three, what the? This is the question. The so-called Hartley bug was a major information security incident that occurred during your time period you were taking the course, and you have to write a social technical analysis of it, right? We don't have time so much now. I'm going to get to that. Use the social technical model and tools discussed in the course. Methods, culture, structure, methods, and machines, and the control stack of security by consensus to outline a root cause analysis of the Hartbleed vulnerability. Remember that there are many stakeholders and many layers in the stack with different social and technical controls where it comes to the Hartbleed vulnerability, but you only have 70 minutes to write, so try just to focus on what you consider are the most important stakeholders in the stack and go ahead and etc. Do you remember writing your social technical exam? I forget what the exam question was. Do you remember? I don't remember for you. What was the case yesterday? It was not hard. So it couldn't be that hard. Anyways. So, and then, so I have this here. That was the article. And then this is the actual exam grade. And you notice 13 did not complete the exam. So the purpose of this was to get people to study for the exam, right? So I'm giving something that hopefully will change the behavior so they'll be prepared for the exam, right? Would have framed it that way. So your job is to do something like that. Identify the behavior you want to change, and then we'll judge it by that and whether this is scary enough to change the behavior, etc. Now it's not us, it might be the crowd voting, we haven't decided. But in our case, we've been analyzing how we did it. Now, what did I do wrong in this? Because actually, this wasn't designed for that. But what did I do wrong? In this one here, I should have had something the guy says, question, I have to say that he didn't study. Right? So I say, it's the night, it's the year of our Lord. It's a sunny day in Jurvik, and you just came back from a party or something. Because I haven't really indicated a bad behavior. I just said it was his or her unlucky chance to be sitting seat 13. So you have to have something that they can change. Right? It's like one of the things I know what you did last summer type of movies for the teenagers, right? They always try to moralize on sexuality of the American population by having scaring the teenagers that if you have whatever, you're going to get sawed in half by the with a chainsaw murder or whatever. Alright? The other thing is there will be this queue. If you attend the sessions, we're going to see later, we're going to have asking questions. And during the speeches, we're going to have an app going up and we want you students to ask questions. The one asked the best question wins of the speakers. There will be an app for doing this. So if you attend the day, you can download the app and then ask a question. And I'd like you to bring that question to the class the next time. Yes. You can ask the question too. The way this app works is that you have a lecture going on, you type in your question, it goes into the app, and then the moderator will decide whether that question should be asked, and your fellow students can vote on the question. Because what usually happens in these things, you get many cases in our, in this lecture is what? You get some professor that's asking these interesting questions for them, but in a sense, everybody else goes, what the heck he's talking about? I don't care about FIPS 143. What's 143? What's FIPS to begin with? I didn't know there was 143 of them. And they have these, and you can see everybody sitting going, well, this is a good question. So we developed an app to go through that. And this is, we talk about this, this is a poem I wrote about security, but we talk about it later. It's not important. I'd like to just get to chapter one now in terms of time. Yes. Yeah, very good. See, visual. So this is from the rule book. As I say, an argument is a set of reasons or evidence in support of a conclusion. And there's different types of argumentation. You have inductive versus scientific argumentation, etc. I won't jump into that now. In the first section of the book, this is from the first page, how you compose a short argument. We have an argument by Winston Churchill that says, be an optimist. There's not much use being anything else. So that's actually an argument. So we're going to start off with simple arguments. So you have a statement, be an optimist, and he gave a reason. There's not much use in being anything else. How would you rebut that argument? Right? So, question. Do you agree, Winston, that we learn from our mistakes? Do you agree that we are learning animals? So if you agree with those two statements, right? So I'm setting up a cross-examination type of one. Okay, so be a pessimist. So I'm rebutting it with another argument. You're guaranteed to learn from your mistakes. You see how this is a bit of equivocation or whatever, but you see how I'm saying. We have a choice. If everything is going good, then I'm never going to learn. Yes. So that's a counter-argument. Fine. But that's an example of a rebuttal. I didn't say it was a counter-argument. It's a rebuttal, right? And but I said to you, in this discussion, you agreed to these two premises, right? So then I got you because you said A and B, and then, okay, then you're being an idiot to not accept C. Right? So let's put this in terms of the group now, this example. We get to this next lecture, but a statement. Optimists are security risk in organizations because? And you sit around and think about this. So in the next class, we bring it up. Why are optimists security risk for organizations? Right, you have to stop being pessimist. Sure, if you want, yeah, we would train. We all got. But. But as I'm saying, you would have to find some sort of statement to fill that in, right? And it sound a bit, you know. Give some arguments why. And how would you say it now? Because if you wanted to use logos, right, because of the 100 email you get every day, at least 2 of them have a virus in it. Whatever. But you have to have an argument, right? That's what you have to figure out what you're doing. So if you're arguing security and risk analysis to someone who's an optimist, you have to figure this out. Do you want to talk to the ethos, logos, or pathos? Because the secretary of, who was it? The head of IBM said, there are two types of organizations in the world. Organizations that have been hacked, and those that don't know they've been hacked. You see how I'm sort of using rhetoric? So I want you to start thinking in terms of this rhetoric. It's a fun topic because you guys have never taught this, right? But the job here is to treat you as security manager. So you have to put all this rhetoric stuff into a security context, right? So this is not a course in rhetoric. This is a course in security rhetoric. Right? So optimists are security risk in organization because 30% of the email we get has they believe that they can open all email when 30% of the email we have has viruses attached to it. Find some, that's a logical argument. Or ethos arguments, I said before. But as the head of the CIA said, there are two types of organizations. That's an ethos argument. Okay, we had this business about equivocation. For example, of equivocation are here now, right? Women and men are physically and emotionally different. Do you agree with that statement? Don't worry about it, we'll get it. Social justice treats everyone equally, even though biologically we are different. Social justice, we have an abstract system. We're supposed to, everybody's different as far as I can see. You're not. Why should we be treated equal? So logically, we shouldn't be treated equal because we're not. So, to be just, the punishment should fit the crime. From each according to his ability, to each according to his needs. Women do not have the same needs or ability as a man, so they should not be treated the same way under the law. You see how we're building up a convalescence of arguments? Everything sounds about da-da-da-da, and I build this up to say that women shouldn't have the same rights as men. That's equivocation. Right? You like vanilla, I believe in liberty. Just because you like... what has vanilla and liberty got to do with anything? That's just how you're piling on the arguments, right? Just an example. So, defend or refute the statement in a group. Women take less risk than men, therefore they are less of a security problem than men. So this will be assignment going home, right? Can you defend that or rebut it? So when you come back, what's the logical fallacy in here? What is the equivocation going on here? Does anybody see it now? I mean, you have to read about what equivocation is. Now, when you're looking at equivocation, you have to really look at words. You saw how I used... But correct? Yeah. That's what I know. I could build many false arguments. It's hard to build real arguments. Unfortunately, I mean, there's only two arguments that I know that are true in the universe. I won't get into that. But your job now is to think security, right? Someone has said women take less risk than men, therefore they are less of a security problem than men. Now, there's a equivocation fallacy here. I'm doing it by equivocation. Can you recognize it? And okay, can you recognize what the equivocation is here? Well, is not liking vanilla the same thing as not wanting liberty? Yes. I made an equivocation between risk and security. But risk and security are not the same thing. We might be more secure by taking